Welcome back to the podcast. I'm very excited today. I have Sassy Moen on the show. Sassy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad. So I just wanted to ask you, you know, you're a filmmaker, right? And I wanted to ask you a little bit about your story of how you came to direct. And I was just very curious because I think your film came out during COVID, right? Like last year.
My film Fear actually did. Yeah. The one, and then I shot a film also during COVID. So Okay. Lots of stuff going on during COVID.
Yeah, no, I want to hear a lot about that just because I know maybe COVID's a little bit of a tired subject, but you know, being in school for the last couple of years, it's definitely, I've seen the COVID has an impact on everything. So yeah. I'd love to hear how you got into directing, some of your influences, all that.
Sure. Well, I've wanted to be a director since I was little kid, like 5-6 years old. My parents both work in the TV industry and the news. And so it kind of just sort of manifested through that. And I started taking TV production classes when I was a little kid. And I got to direct plays in my high school and middle school, which was fun. And so then I went to film school at Chapman. And while I was there, I made a feature film called Happy Holidays. And it was extremely difficult. Chapman told me it was too ambitious and they said I couldn't do it. And they were proven wrong. So that was nice. And we did like self fundraising and stuff, and this was before Kickstarter, and got a lot of stuff on social media for it. And that kind of took it from there. And so I've been making movies ever since. And I really started getting into more of the freelance filmmaking about like 5 or 6 years ago, I would say. Like, you know, before that, you kind of have your real job and then like your passion job. So like I would be like, you know, when I was younger, working at production companies as a PA and then like directing on the weekends or whatever. But now I think for the past like 5 or 6 years, I've actually been freelance filmmaking, which has been really fun and interesting, especially the commercial work that I've been doing, because it's opened my eyes to a whole different type of storytelling that I never would have entered into had I not actually been forced to for jobs.
Can you tell me what freelance filmmaking is? I don't think I've ever heard that term used before. I'm just curious.
I mean, it's a little bit of everything, right? Like I learned to edit when I was younger, and I stopped editing in college because they made us learn Avid, and no offense to Avid, I learned on Premiere and I was just very against it. And then a couple years later, when I was looking for an editor, I kept running into sort of roadblocks. And so I was like, well, I learned to edit once, I might as well do it again. So I started editing, and then I also write my own scripts. And so I was like, I'd be writing social media posts for it, and people started hiring me to do their social media for their films. And then I produced my own films and people started hiring me to produce their stuff. And then between directing, writing, producing, and editing, it kind of converged into this whole thing where, you know, like companies and I don't know, different people are like, oh, we can save money by hiring all of these things in one person, you know? And so that's basically what I do. And so now I usually, for all my jobs, do an assortment of all four of those different categories, or like three or two or something like that. And it's been really fun because it's honestly taught me a lot about just different techniques and the way to side hustle and stuff like that. And like, you know, someone will hire me for a job and they're like, you know, have you ever done this type of commercial before? And I'm just like, no, but I can, you know. And then you just learn how to do that different skill set, and then now you have a new skill set under your belt. So that's basically, I would say, freelance filmmaking.
So it's almost like you're like a jack of all trades then,
right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, because it's fun, you know. Like writing and directing is amazing, and it's really cool to actually then translate that to a real job, right? Because that's the key, is they don't really teach you that in film school, which is like how to make money from the assets that you're learning in college. And so it's been really great being able to actually make that transition. It's been very hard. It was not easy, but it's been fun, you know, at the same time.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about the transition, but you did mention that your short film your feature length film back in college, was it?
Yeah.
That you said was too ambitious. What was it? Like, I'm just so curious now.
I know. It was, you know, it was really crazy too when Chapman said that, because it took me off guard, because like, first of all, their motto at the time was the sky's the limits or something like that. But I basically was kind of tired of the same old stuff in film school. And I realized that if I get to direct a thesis, which is still an if, that I would be walking out of school with the same type of thesis as everyone else. You know, you get your parameters, it has to be this long and this budget or whatever. And, you know, I had friends going to USC and UCLA and they have the same things, and that's great. But I was like, well, how does this get me a job? How does this get me hired out of college? And so I decided to make a feature film, which was crazy. Like, you know, I had so much training and stuff, and I was like, no, I can just try it. Like, what's the worst that can happen? It doesn't happen. Like, so what? At least I tried. And then it did happen. And it was so hard, especially because I didn't know what I was doing. No one else knew what they were doing. And we were all like 19, 20, but we all really wanted to do something different. And the cool thing is that I feel like a lot of the people in the post-production team really flourished. I mean, one of them is now an Oscar-winning composer. He did Black Panther. His name's Ludwig Göransson. And like the sound designer is doing lots of great movies. And the editor of the film is now like an actual producer. And so it's like, I think that by the end of the project, we'd really found a nice group of kids, and I would be safe calling us kids, like 21 years old at that point, from different film schools who were like, let's do something different. And so we got distribution for the film. We made the money back from the film, which is nice to say. I mean, the budget wasn't very high, but we still made the money back for it. And that basically kind of got a lot of us started in the film production world.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting. You talked about like having to have a, well, you use the term side hustle, and like, you know, you have like your day job, and then like, how did you balance that? Because I think some people forget that when you want to work in Hollywood, that's reality sometimes with people, right? It's not like you're going to be directing like Steven Spielberg right from the start, right? Or right from the jump. But, you know, I have friends that want to be, directors and stuff. And I'm just curious what your, if you had any, not just advice, but just like, you know, I don't know, to talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, when I was first really into it, it always helped that with me, I've always known I've wanted to be a director, like I said, since I was a little kid. So there's never any wavering in that, you know, statement. So that's a big help, right? To believe in yourself. And then the other thing too, is like making sure you can schedule everything. When I first started, I had a full-time job at a production company. My first one was a receptionist and PA. The next one was an office manager and social media thing. But you know, that was 5 days a week, a guaranteed paycheck. You got a little bit of benefits and you're in the heart of it. So I got to meet people who like ran equipment rental places and like loaned me free equipment, or like people were like, you can use this space to have casting and stuff, you know? So it was like always talking about what I was doing with the people who would listen. Not everyone wants to listen or cares, but you know, some people are nice and actually do. And I think with that, it was just like, I always just kept going, right? There wasn't ever a time where I was like, okay, wait, I have to sit back and like, think about this and think about my money and all that stuff. Because it's like in Hollywood, that saying sucks, but it's true. It's like, you have to spend money to make money. You know, like films aren't cheap. You have to pay for locations and food and casting and all this stuff. And so I kind of looked at every paycheck that I had as like, okay, how can I then parlay this into a film that will get me more money later or get me a better job later? And so you kind of have to think about that constantly, which can be exhausting and disheartening if you, like I was, were passed over for promotions or like constantly being asked by people like, oh, so you're an actress? Like, oh, you make movies? That's cute. Like, you know, and then promoting my male counterparts who were doing way less than me. But even with that, it's just like, you can still find valuable people. And that's another thing. I remember in film school, they kept saying like networking, networking. And I was like, what does that even mean? That's so exhausting to say, but it is true. It's just like, you've got to always be talking about what you want and then listening to what other people say. And you'd be surprised how many people will kind of like gravitate towards you and vice versa, right? If someone, even my friends now, like they're, most of them are aspiring filmmakers in some degree as well. And it's not like I put out a post being like, hey, can I have friends who are like aspiring filmmakers? But it's just, you just kind of start meeting people and like being like, you want to go to this event or whatever. And then suddenly you have a core group of people who work on your projects and you work on their projects. And then you have dependable people who get better as you get better and everyone's films get better at the same time.
Yeah, I think everybody, you know, it is cliche, like that cliche that, what is it? It's who you know, right?
Right.
And all that. But it also, you seem very humble about this, but you know, I think, you know, you've beat around the bush a little bit, that it also takes a lot of hard work, right? Like, I think that you probably can look at this now that you talked about you're in a better position now, like you're happy with that. But that grind, right? It's still, I mean, it's still, of course, a grind, but that was a different, like a separate kind of thing, right?
It was crazy. Like, it's like, especially when I was first getting started and transitioned from a full-time job to freelancing, I got out of it personally, out of the full-time job sort of hole that you can find yourself in the film world, is I started a business with a friend where, this was in 2012, where we did social media and branding for companies or films or artists, when at the time social media was kind of just taking off. And because I had done that for all of my films, like done social media campaigns, even though they weren't called that, it was just like me posting about stuff, or like, you know, good posters or good artwork for your films. And so I was able to then parlay that into an actual income. And then for these companies, a lot of them, like, they needed websites, and they're like, we need commercials, we need content to promote our stuff. And then suddenly I'm directing, and that was my first paid directing job, was through that. And then, you know, I never really wanted to do anything with social media or branding, so I just kind of dumped that and then, you know, moved on to the next step. Although it was not as smooth as that at all. It took like 4 or 5 years to actually like get through the whole process, you know, because you also, like, I'm only in my early 30s now, but you know, when you're in your mid 20s, like, you don't know what the hell's going on. Like, your life is crazy, and you know, things are happening all around you. And so it's like, it's hard to then tune that out and just focus. So it's like, you just kind of have to keep doing it. That's really, like, you can't give up ever. That's,
yeah. And what would you say, you know, another cliche is like, a job is a job. But I mean, what you're describing here is like, it sounds a lot like, you know, you might have to work on other people's stuff, or you have to take you know, and like, it sounds like, you know, you've done a bevy of different things, right? You did social media, and then, but you've also done, you know, things that you're better at. So I don't know. I'm just so like fascinated by like the, I don't know, like by the, you know, determination it takes. And I do want to talk about film school a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I had just gotten, I'm not trying to make this.
No,
funny, I got accepted to a film school for grad school that I'm very excited about. And I'm just curious my undergrad is not a film school. So I'm just curious what to expect, maybe for people like me that are, you know, heading into film school for the first time.
Well, I found, and this is just based on my own personal experience and what I've found from other friends, is that a lot of people in film school, by people, I should say faculty, tend to have a very structured plan for you of like, you know, you take these classes, you do these things, and then that leads to this. And for me personally, I don't really like that type of stuff, because it's like, you know, why does A plus B always equal C? Like, no, there's no like set path to become a filmmaker. And I think that the best thing that I got out of film school without even intending to was the connections I made with other people who wanted to work on my projects, and vice versa. So what I always tell people when they ask me about what should I do in film school, which I expect, is like, create your own opportunities, because the school will give you some, but it's really about what you do. Like, you know, especially if you're beginning, like, don't go, I made my feature film my junior year, right? So I had 2 years before then to kind of mess around and figure out sort of what was going on. And I don't, like, you know, first day and be like, hello, I'm gonna make, you know, the biggest blockbuster thing ever. But like, try, even if your thing isn't making a film while you're there and you want to be a writer, just start writing your own stuff outside of class. Like, you have an assignment in class, like, you know, write your 10-page script and turn it in, then keep working on it if you love it, and turn it into a feature, turn it into a spec, or whatever you want. Because like, film school, they give you the tools and they show you what to do with them. But I found in the industry, like, you really have to create your own opportunities and show the world that you're different, because, you know, everyone here goes to film school and they come out of film school and they're like, so what makes you so special than like all these other people? And then that's when you say, well, I did X, Y, and Z, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely something that, you know, it just rings true. Like, you do have to kind of, right, like, is, you know, even right now being, you know, well, because I guess I probably should have clarified that I want to be on the journalism side of it. But even then,
oh, very cool.
But even then, it's like, even like what you just said was completely true. Like, my school didn't really give many opportunities. I found the first internship way out. I found it myself. And then,
yeah,
has led to so many great opportunities and things that, and you know, I think somebody at one point in my class had called me lucky, and my roommate and friend was like, well, it's not luck, it's just that, you know, you have to find those opportunities and make the most of it. And I think that's the big thing.
Yeah, I kind of get annoyed when people call me lucky, because I'm like, luck has nothing to do with this. Yeah. Like, I have worked my ass off for like 15 years and like just persisted and been broke AF. I'm not gonna curse, but like been just so broke and just been like, what am I doing? It's just like, well, I just have to keep going and try and find money so I can keep pursuing my career. And you know, it's like, you have to be innovative, especially if you don't come from money. I mean, that's the other thing they don't tell you in film school, is that, you know, if you want to jumpstart your career, it helps to have like $50,000 from your parents, like, you know, but like, I didn't have that. Most people, I would say, don't have that. But like, if you don't have that advantage of being able to buy a fancy camera or being able to take time off after school to like work for no money or whatever it is, you really just have to figure out a way to balance your life in a way that doesn't overburden you, but you're like, I can make this money to then do this opportunity. That's kind of just the way you always have to look at it, you know, but you also can't burn yourself out, which you can really only learn by burning yourself out and then learning to never do it again.
I understand that as I'm doing my thesis and doing all this other work outside of it.
I understand
everything that you're saying. It rings so true. Even my roommate, he wanted to go to his big thing. So he's not into film, but he wanted he wanted to travel to Greece with his girlfriend last summer.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of the same thing. It's not quite, but it, you know, he worked on campus and did some other stuff and was very disciplined with his money. Didn't really go out and stuff, just so that they could do it. And they ended up going for 5 weeks, and he still talks about it ad nauseum to this day.
That sounds amazing. And like, I bet he really enjoyed it and valued it so much more because he worked so hard to make it happen.
Yes, definitely. So, and I think, what is your advice? Because as an artist, it's a little bit hard, because you talked about it earlier where people might be like, oh, you're making, you know, movies, or, you know, cute, or, you know, in my case, it's like, oh, you write about movies, you know, it's like, but how do you shake off that, you know, that kind of, I don't know what to call it, criticism, but you know what I mean? Like that, the kind of passive aggressive, you know, things you get.
I mean, now I feel like well armored to it, right? Because it's like, not to toot my own horn, but I'm like, I know I'm good. I know I'm not perfect, but I have won awards. I keep being hired for things. And like, so therefore I must be good at this. So when people tell me, you know, like I actually recently had a colleague who recommended that I make a movie that people wouldn't guess a woman made it. And I found that kind of offensive, because I'm like, do you tell Ava DuVernay to make white male stories? Like, do you tell, I don't know, like Quentin Tarantino to not have violence in his films? Like, there are certain types of niches that directors really like exploring, whether it's themes or types of casting or stories or whatever. And, you know, when my friend said that, I just kind of was just like, okay. And, you know, just move on. Like, I'm not going to prove him wrong, like in any sort of conversation. It's kind of like you have to bounce that stuff off you and just not let it affect you. When I was younger, it really, really drove me crazy, especially when I was first getting started and I didn't have like an arsenal of things under my belt to prove these people wrong. And that's just the thing, is like, you just have to keep going. Like when I told one of my AP English teacher from high school about what Chapman did. Now they said it was too ambitious, and he laughed. He's like, well, that's just one opinion. And I was like, yeah, exactly. That's just one opinion. So it's like when someone says, oh, what you're doing is too ambitious, or what you're doing is unobtainable, you're like, that's just your opinion. My opinion is I disagree with that statement, and I'm going to prove you wrong.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that's exactly what you have to do. It's best to just be able to like to move past, and then, you know, your words or actions speak louder than words, I guess. I keep bringing out all these really random cliches, but.
No, but you know, it's like, that's the thing, is like, they always frustrated me when I was younger, because I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, actions speak louder than words. But then it's like, no, but it's true, because people can say a million things, but not as many people actually do things. You know, people can criticize your work all they want, but I guarantee half of those people aren't even making movies, right. You know, they're, or they tried once years ago and because it didn't work out for them, it must not work out for anyone else. Like that, it's just, they know the right way and that you should really settle down for like an office job and a 401k, you know, it's just like, you have to really just trust yourself and not dilute yourself into thinking like, oh, I can conquer the world in a day or whatever, you know, set realistic expectations. Mm-hmm. And this is just a side note for filmmakers. One thing that I've always seen is like people who are getting started, like really shooting too far, like writing a period piece when they only have a $2,000 budget, or like having an explosion in their film when they don't have a GFX artist lined up or proper stunt coordinators or so, you know, or even the budget for a stunt coordinator. It's like, write what you know you can do. That doesn't mean don't challenge yourself, but write something that you know you can accomplish is a big piece of advice.
Yeah, of course. One more cliche. Yeah. Don't bite off more than you can chew.
Right. Exactly.
I'm sorry. But for all the haters out there, they can just look at your body of work. And I did want to, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about that because sure. I'd gotten an email about how to hack birth control. And yeah. Is this a film or is it a series?
It's a pilot. It's a TV pilot. It's so pilot. The series is How to Hack and this episode is Birth Control.
Oh, I see. So did you create the series? I'm sorry.
No, I actually just wrote How to Hack Birth Control first and then figured out it was a series second. So you know, I had the idea of, because I've done different types of like hack commercials for brands. And I kind of had this light bulb of like before the pandemic of how funny it would be to make a How to Hack video, but about something like worthwhile, right? Like something that, I don't know, more than like buy this product, you know, that could change people's lives. And so when I wrote How to Hack Birth Control, I realized that I could do a whole series like how to hack climate change, how to hack voting rights, that type of stuff in a way of informing people, but through comedy. So instead of like beating you over the head with a opinion or an idea, it sort of illustrates it out in a digestible way that makes you laugh at the same time.
Is that available on streaming? Is it?
Yeah. So How to Hack Birth Control is in the festival circuit right now. Oh, okay. It's on some, you can go to birthcontrolhacks.com/watch or birthcontrolhacks.com. A lot of festivals are virtual now, and it's actually in, I think, 5 different festivals over the next 30 days that are available online. Oh, wow. And more have been coming in like that are in person or virtual throughout the summer. So it's, I would say, hopefully it's a safe bet that you'll be able to watch this online now and through the entire summer and fall, as these festivals have really cool virtual platforms that I can really appreciate as a filmmaker in a pandemic. So you can go to the website and it gives you all the information of like where you can buy the tickets, where you can watch the film, all that sort of fun stuff.
Of course. Well, congratulations on it being on, you know, in all these film festivals and such. And, you know, of course, when I was looking at your website, I noticed that so many of the projects had writer, director, editor, as you've talked about. Yeah. Do you have one? I know that they all kind of, for you, they all work together, but is there a stage that you prefer the most, you know, like that you favor?
That's like so hard. I mean, I feel like definitely directing on set is just so fun because it's always such a challenge. I always look at like each day of set like a jigsaw puzzle, you know, you have to properly fit everything together and a million things could go wrong. And so like you have to plan for all that and have contingency plans and also know how to work with everyone. And so when you accomplish like what you wanted from such a chaotic sort of ingredient soup, when you get what the end result that's like delicious or great, you know, it's super rewarding. However, I will caveat that with, I really have come to love post-production. Like production is amazing, but I didn't quite realize when I started directing years ago how much power editing your own projects have. And I tell like filmmakers all the time, especially women filmmakers or minority filmmakers who maybe have more trouble finding people who share their worldview of a project, there's so much power in being able to choose your edits and like you can make or break a performance, change an entire scene. You can change an entire story with the wrong editor or the right editor. And plus it saves a ton of money because you don't have to pay an editor.
Yeah, that's completely fair. And you know, finally, before I let you go, do you pay attention to the Oscars? I know some people just don't care. do you care at all?
Yeah, no, I definitely care. I mean, this year is pretty exciting. There's two women up for Best Picture, which is pretty cool. I've been sort of low-key following the whole like Power of the Dog controversy that I'm kind of like, why is this even a thing?
Is it the one with are you talking about what Jane Campion's been saying, like the
There's like sort of like a back and forth going on or something that I just am very confused about why people are putting energy into that type of like feud or something.
No, I agree with you. I was just writing an opinions article for my school newspaper on the same thing, where it's become so like hostile, right? And then people are now putting down one movie over the other, like Coda and The Power of the Dog. And I loved both of them, and I don't know why that's not okay. So we're recording this before the Oscars this Sunday. It'll probably release next week. But do you have any predictions? And we can see what, you know, if you're right on. Do you have any quick?
I can't give any fair predictions because I feel like the Academy always surprises me or then doesn't surprise me, which is kind of like, guys, come on, like stop being old and white. Like really, you know, like try and think a little bigger. But I personally loved West Side Story, but I also just love musicals, and like, I love that musical in particular, but I have no idea, especially based on the previous awards that have been going on. It's kind of been little surprising at every single one, like what's winning and what's being overlooked and stuff like that. So I don't know. Do you have any predictions?
Well, I mean, I'm hoping that Coda wins because I did interview Sean Hedder a few months back. So, and that was my favorite film of last year. So I'm just hoping more than anything. but are there any movies that were kind of overlooked that you're kind of bummed? It doesn't have to be, you know, they didn't have to be shut out.
I did see a fair amount of the Oscar films last year. I don't know. I feel like pretty much all the ones I loved are up for things. You know, there hasn't been one where I'm like, why isn't this happening? Like my favorite film of 2019 was Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
And I was a little disappointed when that didn't win as much as I hoped that it would. But there isn't one like that so far. Like, I mean, like, for future things, like my favorite film this year so far has been The Worst Person in the World.
Yes,
so, you know, like hoping that that doesn't turn into like Jojo Rabbit, where it just like is overlooked on so many things. But we've still got like what, like 8, 9 more, 10 more, how many months are left in the year? So who knows what else is going to come out, you know, between now and the end.
Yeah. And I guess I'm sorry to keep you a little bit longer.
No, but
you mentioned Jojo Rabbit, and my thesis is actually on Jojo Rabbit.
Really? I would love to read that when you're done whatever.
Yeah, for sure. I'm writing we're in the results section now, so discussion, then it's finished. But
I'd actually really love to send it to me when you're done.
I 100% will. But I am curious, because do you think any of the Oscars, I remember that year and I thought, oh, it was my second favorite movie. I loved Booksmart as well. That was my other one. Booksmart and Jojo Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if any of that has to do with the controversy, because my thesis is about the satire.
Right.
But my defense of it is that I think if you're trying to be, if you get upset over, for example, this portrayal of Hitler, excuse me, it's like trying to find something to complain about with the film, because I think clearly this is not, it's not Hitler. It's an imaginary, a lonely imaginary 8-year-old that, or his imagination of what Hitler would look like, you know, and I don't know. And I don't know, since you loved it so much, I'm just curious what your thoughts, you know, on the satire.
To start, I love satire. How to Hack Birth Control is all satire.
Oh, perfect.
It's literally from start to finish. But I love like Jojo Rabbit. I love the way they integrated music and everything. And just like you said, like, I didn't feel going into it that like they were trying to make Hitler likable. Right. It was a story about, you know, like you said, a young boy who is isolated and confused and doesn't really like what's going on around him, but doesn't understand how to articulate that. And it seemed like I loved in the beginning when they used that Beatles, I Want to Hold Your Hand, the German version. And just like, you know, it made sense, right? Like, if I'm sure there are like children in Ukraine, like trying to make sense of what's going on right now and having their own imaginative experiences, because it's also escapism from something horrible. And I thought that was like, in the end, Jojo Rabbit was so beautiful about this boy's journey and how he learns to like let go of Hitler and let go of the badness, and then, you know, come to love, you know, his friend and everything like that. I found it to be incredibly empowering. But like, my godfather, who's a Broadway playwright, and he helps me with my work and always like we talk about films, and he hated it. He was like, I hate Jojo Rabbit. I can't even see it. Like, you know, he went on this whole thing about it. And like, he had valid points, you know, about the Holocaust and stuff. And I was just like, well, that's your opinion. Cool. Like, you know, whatever. So I guess I can see both sides, but as a huge fan of satire, and I also feel like you can generally tell when a film is done from a place of good, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to a place of making money or a place of bad. And I felt like the heart of Jojo Rabbit spoke for itself in the entire execution of the film from start to finish.
Yeah. And do you like The Great Dictator as well? Cause that's another
yeah.
one.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like, I tell people a lot, like if you can't make fun, like if you can't laugh at what's happening, then what's the point in being here? You know, we have one life to live on this planet. And I personally find pretty much everything hysterical because of that fact, right? Like, I mean, we're just like a blip in this huge universe, and people get all bent out of shape about, like, I don't know, with birth control specifically, it was just like women should just have the right to have birth control and right over their bodies. Like, why are you getting bent out of shape about like different things? And it's just, if you can't make fun of this terrible movement that's happening, which I think is, you know, the oppression of women that is going on right now, then like you're just angry all the time. And I'd rather take that anger and use it for something positive that can help like bring happiness to the world and also annihilate the oppression of women.
Oh, and I think satire is great too. Well, my professor will love this, that it's meant to critique, right? And I think right. if you can do that, then
totally.
You know, especially in a lighthearted way where, you know, you're not beating people over the head, but you're still sending a very powerful message. Even, you know, same thing with Jojo Rabbit, right? It's not about, right. you know, so I don't know.
It's not about the anger and hate. Like one of my favorite comedians of all time is the Marx Brothers. And I love how they satirize the upper class, like, cause they grew up so poor, and like, then they were rich and they were just like, let's make fun of everything around us. Cause it's hysterical, you know? And that's kind of the way I look at things. Seems like we have a similar sense of humor.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, it's been a brilliant conversation. I'm so excited to hear your feedback when I send you my thesis when it's finalized. You know, and I will have to watch your film. I will look into the film
festival. I'll send you a link. Yeah.
That would be great. Well, thank you so much for your time. You know, you're always welcome back on if you'd like to.
Cool. Thanks so much for having me. This was fun.